Well, the criminal hush money trial involving former President Donald Trump got underway yesterday. New York prosecutors allege that Trump violated the law and corrupted the 2016 election in an attempt to conceal sexual encounters with a porn star and a Playboy model. The trial's opening day also saw testimony from David Pecker, former publisher of the National Enquirer, shedding light on a catch-and-kill scheme aimed at suppressing unfavorable stories about Trump. And this morning in court, we find out if the former president violated a gag order placed on the case by the judge. Let's welcome back to JR Morning for his insight, Matthew Snyder, leader of investigations and white collar defense practice at Honigman Law. Matthew, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks again for having me back, and lots going on in court today.
Yeah, you know, he sent an email out yesterday to his supporters saying all hell breaks loose in 24 hours. Friend, in 24 hours, the hearing on my gag order will begin. I could be thrown in jail at that very moment. What do you expect to happen today at that gag order hearing?
Well, jail is a possibility, but at the very least, there should be the judge discussing whether or not a fine could take place because of the things that Donald Trump has said, even though he has violated the gag order, is the allegation by the prosecution. Now, I have to tell you, I view this as kind of the calm before the storm. Right now, we're having this nice conversation on WJR about the trial and what could happen. But if he is actually jailed, that will be an amazing and unbelievable event, and it will be so polarizing and so destructive in many, many ways. People will be really upset about that. And so it's interesting to talk about it now as an abstract concept. Mm-hmm. But if that really happens, then our life in America could change rapidly if there is an uproar over that.
There's some speculation out there that the judge could defer the punishment to rule that he did violate the gag order, but to delay punishment. Also, there's this notion that, especially when it comes to some of the things he said about the jury being infiltrated with closet liberals, basically retweeting something that Jesse Waters said on the air, can you violate the gag order by proxy? He's saying he can.
Yes, you can. You can do it through other people. That's called a straw action, where other people are carrying out your business. But in Trump's defense, if you think about it, all of these jurors are isolated. They are not allowed to look at the media. They are strictly prohibited from looking at social media. So they shouldn't be seeing any of those comments anyway. And I expect that Trump's team will bring that concept up again today.
But Matthew, the jury is not sequestered. And I saw, you know, the rules for the jury members. I mean, they have their phones in their hand. I got to believe that they're looking stuff up.
And we already lost one juror out of concern for her safety.
Right. How would you know that?
It's difficult. You can tell jurors to do certain things. You can tell them to refrain from looking at information, but you can only do so much, especially if they're allowed to have their phones. So, again, we will see. The argument is on both sides as to whether or not you can do more. You can take those phones away from those jurors, or Trump's position would probably be, you know, I haven't done anything wrong. I'm just exercising my First Amendment rights, and therefore I shouldn't be sanctioned. Those are all arguments that should come up today.
So there was a phone call on October 26 between Cohen and Trump, and immediately after, then he sets up this account and transfers $130,000. Now, even as late as 2018, he denied knowledge of that payment. So if prosecutors offer that evidence, it would show that Trump lied to the American public about that payment for years.
That could be, but it's not about the meeting, and it's not even about lying about the meeting. It's not that a meeting took place with Trump and Cohen and anybody else. What matters is what was discussed at that meeting and what was the intent. If the intent, as the prosecutor argues, the intent was to violate the election law, whatever that is, because they haven't identified it, that's really what their case is about. Whether they have the actual meeting, I don't think there's any way out of that for Trump. He will have to concede that the meeting took place because it's there in black and white.
So for this to be a felony, there has to be this underlying crime. We're still waiting, I think, for a true declaration, since it's not in the indictment, as to what that underlying crime is. But yesterday, you know, they kept using the word conspiracy, and they pinpointed the moment that they say the conspiracy began at Trump Tower in July of 2015, Cohen, Pecker, Trump together laying out how they're going to contain bad news. That was new. We hadn't heard that before. But how significant is it if now they're trying to prove a conspiracy?
But that is exactly what they said. They said that there was that meeting. Again, we don't know exactly what took place at that, and we won't know until we also hear Michael Cohen's testimony. Right now, Trump still has an ability to say, I did nothing wrong, because you haven't shown the intent as of yet. Now, at the end of this trial, if they don't wrap this up in a bow and throw that in there about intent and about whatever election law there is, you can expect Trump's lawyers will file a motion for acquittal. They would say this shouldn't even go to the jury because the jury hasn't even received adequate evidence on the law. But we have several more days of testimony, so I anticipate that that type of evidence will be coming out from the witnesses.
Matthew, from the defense side of things, they called Mr. Trump a regular husband and father, and he's just protecting his family and things like that. Could that be an insult, perhaps, to some people on the jury who he's not just a regular guy? I mean, he's the former president.
Right. And he's also not a person who regular people don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars laying around to throw out there for hush money payments. So,
and they don't have friends like David Pecker that can catch and kill stories.
Right.
Exactly. And they don't have affairs with Playboy models, is the allegation here. So you do run the risk of, when you're having these conversations to the jury, where the jury is going to say, wait a second, this guy's not anything like me, and they're trying to make him sound like me. I don't trust that. Remember, in order to have a good result in court, typically you want the jurors to like you, and they don't have to like you, but that is always helpful. And if they think that you're being disingenuous or dishonest or trying to cover something up, they will smell that out and they will be unhappy about that.
Should we read into this? I mean, this is really not part of the case, but his family, have we seen his family in court?
No, we haven't. But if you look back at other criminal trials, you might not see the family there. And you know, juries are always paying attention to what's going on. They're paying attention to who's in the gallery. They're seeing who's coming into court. Sometimes that matters, but they're all being instructed to just focus on the facts and the evidence in front of them. And if the family doesn't come in, that shouldn't have the ultimate effect of making a decision on whether he's guilty or innocent. It's really a judgment call for the defendant in any criminal case if he or she wants to bring family members or friends into the courtroom. I've seen it done with great success where the family packs in the courtroom and the juries see that, and that can be done. It doesn't appear that that's the tact that the Trump team is taking today.
All right, Matthew Snyder, leader of investigations and white collar defense practice at Hahnemann Law. We always appreciate your expertise.
Thank you.
And coming up, we'll be speaking with Dave Duilio, professor of political science and director of the Center for Civic Engagement at Oakland University.